Hey, what's up? Hello, future casters. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Past, Present, Future Cast. I am your host, Maria Elena, and we have a different format of episode today. So I've been wanting to mix things up a little bit, and I've really been wanting to bring back certain guests that I loved talking to. So today we have the one, the only, the pop astrologist, Tasha Begg, here with us. Hello, Tasha.
Oh my God, long time no see, considering we just recorded an episode recently together.
Long time no see. We did just record. What did we record? What's it for? Where is it at?
Just a casual Taylor Swift commentary, you know, the way we do at the Pop Astrologist Presents, my YouTube channel. But that episode is live as of this weekend. I had so much fun. I mean, I love that you're such a Swiftie. You gave me so much context and like very valuable insight to layer all this astro on. So I'm indebted really to you. I'm so excited to be here today.
And Taylor, we're a little bit indebted to Taylor for kind of bringing us back. It's a bit of a funny series of just like random coincidences. We had scheduled to do this interview on Friday, August 15th. Today is August 18th. So we'd scheduled to do an interview on the 15th, but then of course, Taylor Swift drops a bombshell. There's going to be a new album. She was on her boyfriend's football podcast. And knowing that I was going to be talking to the one and only pop astrologist, I said, maybe we should record for your show, actually.
You know, pop culture is for everyone, but I am, you know, thankful nevertheless to have the conversation. And then the funny thing is, we were supposed to start this recording a little bit earlier, and Taylor obviously had her second countdown, which turned out to be nothing.
She dropped another countdown, and I was like, ah! You know, code orange, everyone stop the presses, like, let me rearrange my whole day to figure out what this countdown's going to be about. You know, got to FaceTime the Swiftie bestie as the numbers are counting down. Yeah, so we rescheduled this to accommodate for Taylor's breaking news, which was just variant pressings of the album that's coming out. So a little bit of a letdown, but in terms of the astrology of this episode, it did help us out a little bit because we were able to avoid starting recording during a void moon. And would you like to explain to the people what a void moon is?
Sure. So as maybe you might not know, the moon changes signs every 2.5 days, essentially. So it's the fastest moving celestial body. And it's the idea that when the moon is void, it's not making any major aspects. So when you think about like a square, a trine, you know, things like that in opposition, there is no aspect it's making with any other planet. So on some level, it can feel as if the moon is just off doing its own thing. It's unsupervised. It's like,
wandering, you know, a teenager.
Yeah. It's like a teenager with no parental supervision. So like, what is it going to do? You know, and not to say that good things still can't happen during void moons, because again, it's all about the fact that you can't really control how it's going to work out. And, you know, the running joke is you actually can't control really anything, but especially with the void moon, it kind of creates this almost like twilight zone effect. So what I usually recommend people do is catch up with your friends, do low-key things, really indulge in your creativity. It's kind of like the inner mind and inner world is coming to life in a very loud way. But again, different astrologers have different ways of working with it and approaches to it. For me personally, every time, I kid you not, every time a pitch has come in and I've like been like, you know what, let me just like respond, you know, because I'm trying to not get in my head about it, it never works out. Or when I'm pitching something and it never works out. And so it really is the idea for me personally, I have to wait until the moon switches signs to actually like have stuff move forward. Otherwise, it's just going to be caught in limbo.
Yeah, exactly. Limbo. The traditional, more like Hellenistic conception of a void moon is that anything that is started, anything that you like embark upon during a void moon will not result in anything, is kind of that more harsher traditional interpretation. So things where you aren't like, where you don't have like a goal are great to do. Catch up with your friends, mm-hmm. read a book, get some rest, chill out.
Pay your bills is a really
good one.
Because you can kind of send it off to the abyss, especially if you're not hoping for like more collections or whatever, you know, it's like, let me just take care of that. It's never going to come back. Just kidding. Yeah. It might still come back, but there's like a method to this madness here.
Yeah. Goodbye. It's done. So we sat down. Yes. Yes.
Oh, a thought just came to me, just to give an example, because my Virgo can't help itself sometimes. 9/11 did happen on a void moon.
Whoa.
We are coming up into 9/11. 9/11 did happen on a void moon, which is why a lot of people, you know, kind of, it's an example that a lot of folks reference when you're talking about a void moon yielding something or not. And I guess the argument could be, well, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Quite honestly.
I mean,
it was tragic.
I would imagine that the people who enacted that had bigger intentions on disrupting the country as a whole, more longstandingly, more thoroughly, that didn't quite come to fruition for them and their intentions. Interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. Didn't think we'd get to 9/11 in this conversation.
You know, when the moon is void, just kidding, when the moon is out of void.
When the moon's in Cancer and it's time to start discussing how you defend your nation and people, I guess it's
especially because this is a Cancer moon that's squaring Saturn and Neptune. Oh. So, you know, it does make a lot of sense.
It's probably going to get really close to hitting that exact square as we're talking. Interesting. Interesting. Oh, hey. Yeah, I mean, I guess, the moon's at 0 degrees right now. Saturn's at 0. Okay.
Fresh. And I mean, you know what? I was actually just thinking about this too. This week kind of does feel like almost like layered energy on top of each other, which sounds vague as hell. So let me explain that a different way. Because we have the moon squaring Saturn and Aries, at the end of the week, we also have Venus in Cancer squaring Chiron in Aries. So when you think about, you know, the more feminine or softer energies, you know, or activating planets, Venus and the moon, then meeting up with Saturn, Neptune, and then Chiron, right? So, like, there is just a lot about this theme of, you know, self-assertion and protection and erasure and belonging and just the idea of, you know, you think about the mental image of the crab, especially with Venus and Jupiter in Cancer. And they formed that conjunction, that sweet, sweet conjunction last week, which really has been under duress. Like, it just feels like there are such growing pains, is what I'll say this week feels like, especially because we are leading up to a new moon in Virgo. It's asking for maturity, you know, it's asking like, how can you maybe channel your feelings into something, into action, or how can you maybe see beyond your own feelings? But again, it really depends on each person's natal chart and what they're navigating, because some people sometimes give too much and not to themselves, and some people give too much to themselves and not to others. And this is, again, about recalibrating the habits, systems in place so that it can be more efficient, but ultimately it can help you maybe be of better service to your community at large.
Let's get some snaps going for that. So, if you can't tell, Tasha is an astrologer, the pop astrologist, and you can hear quite a bit more about Tasha's journey from being a Wall Street analyst in the big city to a full-time astrologer on the episode that we previously recorded. Earlier this year, it's called Heeding Pluto's Call with Wall Street analyst turned pop astrologer Tasha Begg. It's actually episode number 4. And we recorded that episode number 4, when we recorded that episode 6 months almost to the day that we're recording now. So it's been really fun to like revisit that and come back to this conversation. So definitely go check that out. What I talk about a bit today is just more about who Tasha is, and I'd like to take a little astrological approach to that. So what we're looking at, if you're not looking at this, and for the astrologers who need to know, first of all, we're looking at this chart in whole sign houses. I'm a whole sign astrologer. Tasha, I would love to talk about what house system you use in a moment. But the chart we're looking at has a Scorpio ascendant at 20 degrees of Scorpio, closely conjunct Pluto at 17 degrees Scorpio. Mars, the ruler of the ascendant, is in the 11th house, conjunct Venus. We're going to talk about that. And the sun is in Cancer at 28 degrees Cancer. The moon is in Sagittarius at 10 degrees of Sag. Look at that beautiful chart, Tasha. And we touched on this a little bit in our last interview. We talked a lot about how you have Pluto on the ascendant, Miss Agent of Pluto.
I do. I know. It's so funny because it's like I call myself the Agent of Pluto. I call myself the Pop Astrologist. No, I don't really call myself by my actual name, but I have been getting comfortable with the idea of revealing more of my identity and sharing a little more, you know, just trying to really strike that balance between putting cards on the table and holding them really close to the chest, which I think a lot of Scorpio risings can relate for sure. But the Pluto kind of creates a deeper, I think, like obsessive paranoia about it from time to time.
Yeah, that tracks. It's so interesting to me that it's not going to be a close conjunction for everyone, but every millennial who has a Scorpio rising has Pluto in the first house. It's just what a hallmark of millennials is, like a bit of this like deep intensity. And gosh, it almost makes me think of like how the concept of cancel culture like became really prominent with like the millennial generation of this like scorched earth tactic when perhaps there's like an emotional trigger. So Scorpio being this water sign, Scorpios are very, very emotional, but they like to like cover it up a little bit. Everything's like guarded with a Scorpio. And then if you do them wrong, if you wrong a Scorpio or a Scorpio rising, someone with prominent Scorpio placements, there is a bit of that scorched earth tactic, which is of like, kill it all. You're done. You're canceled. Like, let me bury you 6 feet under and dance on your grave. And that's very like Pluto taking things to extremes.
Yeah, it's interesting. So again, if you are a Pluto and Scorpio baby, specifically, you should have been born between like 1983 and maybe 1995. Like you can probably maybe 1990. Yeah, around that time. So about a 12-year
horizon. I'm 95 baby and I'm at the tail end of Pluto and Scorpio. I think it had come out and then retrograded back in.
Yeah, it does that thing, the dill dance at the end. So yeah, 1983 to 1995, you know, when you kind of think about like, what did that generation grow up with, right? You were brought into the AIDS epidemic. You were brought into the Gulf War.
9/11.
It
all comes back to 9/11.
You know, these are all very formative memories, right? Even when you were in the womb, if you were coming out on the earlier side of Pluto and Scorpio, which you are experiencing your Pluto square now with Pluto moving in Aquarius. So maybe, you know, again, 1983 to 1985, you're probably starting to confront some deeper rooted, you know, things that you might have been putting back in your psyche. But it's the idea that at the Pluto square, it's a real invitation to uncover sort of that stench from the attic. Like, let's open up the windows a little bit and let's integrate, because so many of us kind of operate through life walking with a lot of fear and a lot of subconscious fears guiding motivations and guiding reactions and choices even, you know. And so when you think about the midlife, right, between 38 to 45 is really where I would give that window, you're kind of stepping into this understanding of, oh my God, like, has my fear been running my choices, or am I actually in control of the shit in the way that you know, feels more aligned, right? So it's going to open up some things. And as you know, with Pluto, when it shines a light and when it opens up the door, it's the idea that some things do naturally dissipate or crumble or, you know, really get restructured, but always for your best interest, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And speaking of Pluto moving into Aquarius, it's pretty soon going to be conjunct your Saturn. And I'm just noticing now.
It already hit that.
And it's opposing your Chiron and that Saturn-Chiron opposition. So for those who are not as steeped in the astrological world as we are, Saturn and Chiron are not like happy, fun time friends. I wouldn't call them that.
No, they definitely are tough zaddies, you know, just really whipping you in shape.
And the opposition is like a tough aspect as well. So it's two tough zaddies a little bit like going at it.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, what it's worth, you know, Saturn opposing Chiron, especially Saturn Aquarius opposing Chiron in Leo. Maybe it was a Saturn in Capricorn opposing Chiron in, you know, Cancer, like late degrees. So like that 1991 summer, maybe it was like a couple of years, but like you'd really have the concentration of folks born with Saturn opposing Chiron. So as much as it is going to have a big impact in your chart as the underlying story, you can argue that, you know, we all kind of share a class around the same type of underlying theme, you know, that we're all navigating daddy issues like hardcore. You know what I mean?
A bit of a generational placement, but for every generational placement, so meaning something that many people are born with. So there's like a whole bunch of people born with Uranus and Neptune really close together. Like I mentioned, almost all millennials are born, all millennials, at least from my definition, are born with Pluto in Scorpio. But for certain people, these placements and aspects are going to be more prominent than others. So for Tasha, for example, Pluto is very, very close to that degree of the ascendant. So it's going to be much more prominent as a part of your personality. And this Saturn Chiron opposition, like it's angular for you. It's in your fourth and 10th houses. So a little bit more prominent as well. You get to be a little bit more of the voice of the generation with that going on there. How do you feel like that shows up in your work? So, you know, Chiron being in that 10th house in the midheaven, that's the place where we find our career, our public work, our public perception. How do you find that showing up in your public work?
Yeah, it's actually very interesting because, you know, the myth of Chiron is very half man, half centaur. Mm-hmm. And I think when you take that theme in Leo also of the idea of performance and belonging and friendship with Aquarius, you know, the polarity between Leo and Aquarius, like I think when I think about my life, I think about how I'm a mixed race kid and I think about how difficult it was to feel a sense of where do I really belong and how am I supposed to portray myself and how am I supposed to be in this world, you know? And I'd always kind of get that sort of chironic, like people would always say, no, you're accepted. But at the same time, I'd also get comments basically telling me I'm not given my choices or how I look. And I do think I carry a lot of that duality in me. And I think for a lot of people, you know, my whole thing is like, we're trying to break out of the matrix. We're trying to kind of break free of projected roles or whatever limitations people are setting. Like, you got to do this. You got to have a stable job, then you got to like get married, you got to have the kids, and then you got to do all that. And it's kind of like, well, what if I'm more than that? What if I actually am part of that, but then am something else, you know? And so for me, I feel like even deciding I wanted to be an astrologer, right? Like I was such a finance corporate girly. And if you talk to a lot of people who knew me in my past life, essentially, like, everyone was like, you were the most type A. You were the one that really like was going to be the Wall Street person and we'd all look up to you. It's really inspirational. I do think if you have like, because I have Jupiter in the midheaven too, you know, when you have these like outer planets in on these really critical like aspects in your chart or forming these critical aspects, it kind of, I think, does create this larger than life. Like you're not just living like, I don't feel like I'm just living for myself. Like, I think a big part of what I do is also like, I have to really live to keep making sure other people know that it's like okay to do that and still keep going with it. And even if things might be difficult, like I'm gonna still embrace it because it's more important to keep it going, to keep the dream going, that you're more than just one thing than it is to like admit defeat or, you know, something of that nature. But I do struggle with also the idea of being like a spiritual astrologer, which I am, you know, with my agent of Pluto, which is more personal and more private. But then my pop astrologist is so out there. And it's also about the tension of, again, combining all these different parts of me and finding that acceptance, which the kicker is acceptance comes from within. It really doesn't come from any externalities. And so, yeah, that's a painful lesson I'll always have to remember.
If you say so. Okay.
Pain is, as someone Plutonic, I will say pain is deeply uncomfortable, but also a very important motivating factor. Like, things just don't get done sometimes without that pain.
Without a little
unfortunately
discomfort. Yeah. Pointing out that Jupiter on the midheaven, I have a direct quote from our initial episode that I listened to this morning as I was preparing for our chat today. And you said, and I quote, "Ultimately, I hope to inspire." And that feels very Jupiter right on that midheaven. Jupiter is such, like you said, larger than life, deeply inspiring, very much like, wanting to expand not only your own worldview, but have others expand their worldview through witnessing you. Like exactly how you just, you know, framed it of you have to live authentically and truly so that other people can see that. And with it being in Leo especially, I mean, it's very much the showgirl. Shout out to Taylor. It's very much like, look at me do this. And guess what? I'm also a motivational speaker and you can do it too.
And honestly, I feel like all I want is to be the de facto hype girly for, you know, my friends. Like when they've got something, I'm like, wow, it's so good, you know, like, and it's ironic because I actually did used to cheerlead a little bit in like Malaysia. So it was always there. But I'm the person that is kind of like, listen, like I will help feed your Delulu a little bit, you know, like, yes. I think Delulu is actually so important to kind of guide you. Like, you still have to take the action. You still have to, because I have the Saturn, of course, like you still have to take the action. You still have to really work hard. But the Delulu is so important and you can't lose sight of that.
I think the Saturn in Aquarius also, like how you were describing of kind of understanding the rules and the structure, but also like feeling like you need to break out of it in a lot of ways. That's very Saturn in Aquarius. What was your Saturn return? Was that part of the journey of leaving Wall Street? Did that happen during your Saturn return? Not surprising.
Totally. I lost so many friends.
Yeah.
One thing about my chart is, as much as I am a Pluto Scorpio person, you know, I kind of operate on the thought of like why you chose placements rather than, oh, these are the placements I have. And so for me, I think I had to have a Saturn in my third to really fortify, or in the fourth in this case, like I just had to really fortify my POV or like my personal myth, you know, who I am. And I had to make and up until you fortify it, you're going to be always like met with challenges. And, you know, for me, it translated to a lack of sense of self. Like, I think a lot of people assumed that they had understood a version of myself that I was portraying with, you know, the very prominent Jupiter and Mercury in the 10th. But the reality was it was, I think someone literally actually told me this once in my life and I'll never forget it. But he said that I was a shiny disco ball, which is hilarious because you said that about Taylor in our episode. And
yeah,
it kind of
she's a
brought
mirror
me
ball.
Back to that moment. Exactly. And I remember thinking, what does that mean? Like, do you not think I'm smart? Like, because Saturn, right? Like,
uh-huh.
What does this say about me? You know, because there's a judgment here. And I think I, for the longest time, had this gnarly chip on my shoulder trying to prove people I'm not actually dumb. But then also with the Chiron, it's hard to also even acknowledge that. And so sometimes you do fall into that trap of, is what I'm saying good enough? Like, what's happening here? You know, so it can be relentless. But I think what I really learned with Pluto on Saturn was, or Pluto stationing on it, was I really had to understand sort of whatever I used to complain about my skills or my gifts are actually really my sources of strength and what I can really offer and bring to the table. I provide containers, I provide spaces, and I also have my POV. This is the container I'm providing. This is the vessel I'm providing, and I can make things happen with my Earth. So when I take all this into consideration, I'm very thankful for what Saturn had to kind of put me through to understand what I actually am really proud of about myself. So, and you kind of hear that Leo as well with the polarity.
Yeah, be proud of yourself with that Leo there. Oh my gosh. So you were a cheerleader in Malaysia at one point.
A little bit.
Letting us skip over that. So I when I first kind of looked at your chart, and you gave me your birth data and you were born not in the United States where you live now, I immediately was drawn to that little moon in Sag, that little lonely moon in Sag over there. So can you, if you feel comfortable sharing, like, when did you move to the United States? What's been your international experience?
Sure. So I'm half Malaysian and half Pakistani. And there's, again, the centaur myth already rooted in the Chiron
blended.
And not feeling a belonging.
Uh-huh.
Correct. Yeah. And I actually moved to the States when I was 14. So right around my Saturn opposition. So Saturn again.
Can I interject something? Because we mentioned Chiron.
Yeah.
We mentioned the duality there. But let's talk about Sagittarius is also a centaur. So that moon there in Sagittarius, too. Look at that blending, that duality. Okay, I just wanted to quick note that. Put a tab there. Please continue.
I think my favorite part about the chart. It just feels like a puzzle, right? Like every aspect does talk or reinforce the other. And if this is my big thing with chart reading is if you can find a theme that comes across many different ways, communicated in different aspects, placements, you know, you're onto something and there's something really valuable insight wise there. So when I think about my Sag moon, you know, I always say that my Sag moon is my lifeline. I'm so incredibly thankful to have a Sag moon with all the water I have in my chart. And the Sag moon gives me a lot of perspective. It gives me a lot of humor and optimism and very much, you know, like, what's the real lesson here? You know, if I can find a lesson in anything, it helps me process and integrate this better. And not to feel like I had to hold on to a grudge or a resentment. Like the lesson was supposed to be taught. It's going to be taught anyway, it knows how. And as long as I learn it, then we can move on to something else. But usually when I see Sag prominent ninth house placements or Sag placements, and this obviously speaking from personal experience, you're supposed to kind of break away. You're supposed to travel. You're supposed to kind of visit foreign lands away from yours to widen your perspective. And I would argue that most people are going to end up finding themselves living abroad, whether it is for a temporary stay or whether they do end up kind of moving more permanently abroad. I think of home now being more of New York than anywhere else in the world, actually. And the funny thing is people always ask, why New York? And I always say, because New York lets me be who I want to be without labels, because New York has so many interesting people. And granted, yes, there is a lot of segregation class system wise too, but ultimately I kind of move between worlds here. And I like moving between worlds because I get to learn so much from all the different facets of society and I get to just be myself. So yeah, the Sag moon, it does square Mars and Venus. So naturally, you think mommy stuff too, of course. And that's definitely a big part of the story as well. But it also is funny because my dad was a Sagittarius sun and Jupiter on his sun. So I always link that connection with dad as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And some mom things, even though they're divided by sign, you've got Cancer sun very close to your Chiron within just a minute or so. Interesting. So New York is home now. You've been You've been around the world a little bit. Let's talk. You brought up the Mars and Venus conjunction, and we talked a little bit about Mars and Venus conjunctions in terms of synastry in the Taylor Swift Travis Kelce episode we just recorded, because Taylor and Travis do have a Mars Venus conjunction. Taylor's Mars is conjunct Travis's Venus in terms of synastry. But this exists in one person, in one unit here with you. It's in your 11th house, so you probably have encountered this in those who you've become acquainted with. But how do you feel like that shows up? It's fun doing this with an astrologer, because I can just be like, there's this thing. How does that happen for you?
Totally. And you're talking to the right person about it, because I do free write every morning and I'm looking at transits. And not to say that like I am deeply intellectual about my chart, but that's how I best learned the astrology. It's a very Sagittarius thing too, is living, breathing, really understanding how it's working, observing, and then replaying. So, oh my God, honestly, the Mars and Venus conjunction has been something that I have been noodling on for a long time, because Mars is obviously my traditional chart ruler, and Venus rules my descendant, you know, so it really is the tension of self and other always, but specifically around friendships. And that is fundamentally where I have always had the harshest breakups and toughest losses, and even getting comfortable with the idea that not all friends are here forever, because Virgo in the 11th is always looking to refine, and it is all, and because I'm a Pluto rising person, I'm going to evolve a little more rapidly than other people. Not because I'm, and here's the thing, I had a Pluto rising friend who was evolving, but maybe not the way I was evolving. And so we evolved away from each other, right? But it's just the idea that when you have Pluto on the rising sign, it just feels like you're always going through a transformation, evolution. You're always coming into contact maybe with different people as such, because they reflect these different versions of yourself. And my thing is, I have both the out of sect malefics in that 11th, you know, and it's hard. Mm. It as much as I'm very thankful for a lot of the people that I have been so fortunate to meet, including yourself, you know. I have had some really brutal, especially this year with the Mars retrograde in Cancer. Oh my God, just destroyed, getting rocked by my female friendships. But again, it comes back to Saturn and the idea of discernment and knowing, you know, knowing who is really with you versus where your fear is kind of also then coming out and being reflected back at you. So what I had to really understand that about myself too is whatever fight or whatever problem I was experiencing with my friendships, it was a lot of criticism. I definitely do face a lot of criticism Virgo. From people.
Mm-hmm. We're talking Absolutely. About these places being in Virgo.
You want, and Venus is in fall in Virgo, you know, so you do want to, like, my thing is always, I'm so worried about disappointing my friends, but then also, you know, and that is, but then also knowing when you've disappointed your friend because you can't meet the standard that they want you to meet, but then recognizing that that standard isn't the standard for you is also incredibly challenging. So that's, you know, part of how I have viewed, that as of late, especially. And I am thankful that I get to kind of move into the idea of, I do have to snip. I do have to, you know, kind of like a get a trim every 6 months or so with my friendships, because it's always going to keep evolving. And when I assume it's not evolving, that's when I'm in trouble.
Yeah, the Virgo of it all, of needing that regular trim, that regular pruning. Absolutely. And the constant evolution with being a Plutonic person, having Mars right on the ascendant there. You know, we've discussed this, that I have Pluto conjunct my chart ruler. Pluto is conjunct Mars for me in my chart, in Scorpio. And that necessity to evolve almost constantly. Like, you really can't rest on your laurels at any point. It's probably going to go poorly for you, that need to constantly churn and change. And I had a relationship with someone who also had Pluto on the ascendant. I had a very long relationship, actually, very long and deep relationship. And then we got to a point where we were both evolving in such different directions that, yeah, learning how to like let go. I think of both Scorpio and Pluto. When I think of those two, I think of the decomposition process, but also I think of like, I don't know if this is crude, but like releasing waste from the body, like literally like shitting, like getting rid of the waste. And that process of like, if you get backed up, if you aren't letting that go really freely and easily at all times, oh my gosh, like you do not want that level of energetic constipation. Holy heck, is that a bad time?
I love that you brought up constipation because my Venus in Virgo loves a good bowel cleanse.
Yes, I bet it does.
I think about, that's how I approach, like, so I'm doing the artist way. That
beautiful,
was sort of like
beautiful.
My Mercury retrograde project. And I kind of used to do the free morning write pages by myself, like without even realizing it was the artist way. Like that was when I felt the most like creative and inspired and just like letting everything free flow. And I realized, oh my God, that is literally taking a dump for your brain. Like yeah. In order for you to really move on with your day, you really have to dump shit out onto a paper the same way you would want to go to the bathroom in the morning. And like that's a meaningful part of maintenance and upkeep. So yeah, for me, I definitely spent a lot of time writing, to the point where my partner once was like, did you vocalize this to me or did you just write this in your journal? Like,
or did you just write it down?
And I'm like, that is a very good point because I definitely let this out, but I did not let this out to the person. I just let this out in my journal.
That's funny. I think I saw a TikTok. It was probably a TikTok. I saw something somewhere. I think it was a TikTok where this person was like talking about their morning routine where they like very like consciously, I think they had like affirmations or like some kind of verbal, this was a very witchy context, so like verbal spell speaking that they would do when they were going to the bathroom in the morning and like imagining that full release, like energetically as well as physically through the body.
So good.
Into the porcelain throne and flushing it
so
away.
So good.
It's like,
so good.
Need to start doing that.
I am here for it, honestly. I might need to start doing that too. I just even, that's why I love like saunas and stuff too, you know? I mean, besides the water element, but just the idea of get it out of my body, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever exactly is happening here, energy, anything.
Oh yeah, I've been like growing more and more in my practice as an energy worker and like a client-facing practice as an energy worker. And so working more and more with that, just like releasing, letting go, shedding. I also have the South Node conjunct my ascendant. So I can take it a little too far sometimes of like the constant need to purge. I'm actually learning that there is good in allowing things to like settle and sink in and being able to like absorb. Like I've been wondering as we've been having this conversation, like if you have had like digestive problems or like health problems that have arisen kind of in relation to these placements, because I've seen that
absolutely.
So clearly in my own chart.
For sure. I mean, the big thing for me is always I'm battling a lot of body dysmorphia all the time, which is annoying. I'm sure it's annoying for a lot of people, really. And I think it's the idea of the Chiron mirroring back, like the awareness, you know what I mean, of like seeing how I look or seeing how I actually look, and also recognizing that, yes, there is a distortion of how I view myself, but I also am recognizing how other people are viewing me. And it kind of actually grounds me in this like, okay, I'm not as heavy or whatever as I am. I am, again, working through a lot of these things with my
mom. You're such a little skinny mini.
Which is hilarious because some days I really just don't feel it, which is, again, crazy. If you looked at me on the street, I'm 5'9". I am pretty slim, all things considered. And again, I understand why this is a source of frustration sometimes. I can understand why my female friends would be like, shut the fuck up, Tasha. You know, like.
But the dysmorphia comes for anyone regardless of the physical reality.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, honestly, like that comes out from a place of being mixed. And, you know, I guess now it's cool to be mixed. But the reality is, like, you look weird. You don't look like you belong here or there. And so there is just always a constant struggle with that. Because you're never, again, going to adhere to the standard beauty standard. And with Virgo, it's a lot about standards and expectations, right? So, like, if I don't have a standard to ascribe to because no one looks like me, then I have to kind of be my own standard. And that is also unnerving to embody. This is very personal, but I definitely, when I was dating aggressively in New York, I actually, someone gave me herpes. That was a very Mars Virgo thing. So, you know, it kind of gave me an appreciation now that I think about it in hindsight, because it's an out of sect malefic, right? Like, how do you think about out of, how do you really experience the planetary condition of what you have? Because if I think about it, right, I have Jupiter in an angular house. Great. I have fallen Venus, and I have an out of sect malefic, both of them in the 11th house. So it's never going to be a straightforward, like, success is always going to come at certain costs. It's not like a Taylor Swift, like,
I was just thinking that this is not Taylor Swift's chart where everything looks great.
Yeah. This is a chart that is more like, success does happen. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Opportunities do happen, but it is not as smooth, easy flowing as maybe I might even make it seem to be to other people. And part of that is also the, you know, it's a fine line, right? Between, hey, like, this stuff is hard and this entrepreneurship journey is always difficult, but it shouldn't deter you. So it's like, how much do you also share so that it's not going to hinder people from wanting to experience it and wanting to do better for themselves or do right by themselves? The other thing I think about is I definitely went through a very, like, intense phase about intermittent fasting with my Virgo and and, like, kind of resetting. And I was very, very, I guess, intentional this past year about resetting my cycles back to 28 days, you know, getting off birth control. So there definitely has been a lot of, like, health-oriented things. And I am very much a person that does believe in, like, how you feel about the body is how you're going to feel about, like, the world. And so, you know, how you treat your body, how you let things go is also going to be reflected externally. So I definitely come into a more, especially with the nodes in Virgo, like, been a more intentional practice around, like, my habits, my well-being, but my health and, like, what I'm putting in my body, like, the whole nine yards, essentially.
I would also imagine that you would end up being friends, acquaintances with a lot of people who that is a large part of their life, like wellness. We were just talking about, like, acupuncturists and such before we started recording this. And, like, you know, we've connected, we're friends now. I'm a massage therapist. Like, I work really much in the, very much in the wellness sphere. So that, I imagine, would be some people that you would encounter for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of interesting. And I think about what I did on my birthday. I actually just went to the bathhouse with a rooftop pool.
And
my acupuncturist friend came with, right?
Oh,
so
my
that's
God.
Like, that's the ideal vibe. And don't get me wrong, I do love a fancy dinner and, like, a fancy cocktail from here and there. But yeah, I've also been just a lot more mindful about my alcohol consumption lately. I am a big stoner, though, so that actually does help my Virgo anxiety. Like, because I do have, if you look at it in Placidus, like, it is a 10th house stellium. And something I had to realize recently was the compulsion to want to keep being productive. But then, like, it's almost like you can't be ever satisfied with, oh, I just did this really amazing thing, and then, like, sit in it and enjoy it for a second. It's like, okay, but oh my God, I have nothing else coming up. So then now there's, like, a freak out, you know? So there's always that tension also.
Yeah, let me force my brain to, like, not be able to focus on work for a little while.
Correct.
No, that's so real, so real. So the last time that we recorded, you teased that you had a YouTube channel coming out, and that was 6 months ago. And we've already mentioned I've been on your YouTube channel twice now, actually. So how is that going? How has that been for you?
Oh my gosh. I I think this was the year that I really came into an appreciation for podcasting, or, and like, the funny thing is I didn't even acknowledge it as a podcast. You know, I'm like, I'm just starting a YouTube channel, but really it's like a podcast. And, you know, I've been collaborating with people up until this point. But this feels like a different type of collaboration because, you know, I get to bring so many people on. I get to collaborate with so many different folks. And I would like to think it's been going well, you know. So far, I've gotten, let's say, 23 episodes out. And they were at a weekly cadence. And it was really like going through the Venus, and Venus retrograde was intense.
Dude, I did weekly on this show for a while and I had to pull back.
Weekly is a lot. And I love weekly too, but it is.
I want to get back there.
Yeah.
But it's not super feasible, you know, right now.
It makes a lot of sense from an astro perspective, weekly, because of the transits and things like that. There's always something to talk about. So it's not about like lack of content or lack of finding people, but like a lot of what I was doing was pop culture deep dives. And so, you know, it would be very like artist centric or person centric. And then you kind of wrap astrology around it. And so what's actually really interesting is, you know, I'm coming on and you're trying out a new format. I actually just, my latest episode is similar in that way. We are trying out a new format on my end where I'm not going to give up on the deep dives, but I'm going to supplant it with a focus maybe on the transit. So the transit comes first, and then wrapping events that the transit shows from a high vibration and low vibration perspective, because I kind of feel like that's the weird twilight matrix we're in right now in Uranus and Gemini times. There's highs and lows, and there's a lot of information, and not one transit, like one event is not solely defined by one transit, you know? And so there's a lot to always talk about, but yeah. So hoping for more episodes of that nature in the channel.
Yeah. So an example of that we kind of talked about was that Jupiter, beautiful Jupiter Venus conjunction in Cancer. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. Like one of the best transits of the year. Incredible. You and I talked about the Taylor Swift album release. Like that's honestly giving me some extra pep in my step. Like it's giving me more energy to like face life again, because a new Taylor Swift album comes out, and it does make me and millions of other people like very happy. It's a really positive thing in our lives. And that same transit, and you connected that same transit to the potential overturning of gay marriage in the United States. It's very much the both and of it all.
It's, yeah, it's, I mean, here's the thing, you know, when you put these two together, it's so jarring. It's the juxtaposition and the whiplash is insane. I get why a lot of people are crashing out, quote unquote, right? Or they're not able to necessarily handle all the information that's coming, but, you know, we are in a grand air trine right now with Mars, Uranus, and Pluto. We are in 7 years of Uranus and Gemini. The information and changes are coming fast and furious and overwhelming. And, you know, I thought it was important to at least highlight the Venus and Jupiter conjunction, this one specifically, because the United States has a Cancer sun at 13 degrees, and it also features a Venus and Jupiter conjunction in Cancer. And so when you think about those implications and those parallels, it's like, all right, what are we seeding here? You know, what is coming up in this week? Not to say that we have a sense of how these events are going to turn out, but just the idea that all these things popped up this first week, Venus and Jupiter met up. And, you know, for Taylor, it's like the reveal of the new album. It's the reveal or the solidification of her and her partnership with Travis Kelce. Like, it was almost like a hard launch as a couple unit together also, if you want to even take that, you know? So what does this say about the future, like the American sweetheart love story and where we're at right now? Because it's also interesting, I think Jennifer Aniston recently had her 20-year like Vanity Fair Vogue cover or something, but she was talking about her affair, and we referenced that in the chat too, about how, you know, there's almost like a cultural obsession with like America's sweethearts, and then everyone's kind of taken along for the ride. And so now Taylor and Travis are coming up at this era. But
Travis
is
being called America's sweetheart on his GQ cover.
Insane. It's just all very on brand. But yet again, we have all these like really, really heinous things happening because this Venus and Jupiter conjunction for the United States does challenge the United States Saturn and Ceres. So like there is a lot of whatchamacallit, like when you think about Saturn, right? The tough guy in the room, Saturn's exalted in Libra. So you're like, oh my God, what does that mean? It to me means that this is a Saturn that's incredibly powerful and it's going to take the lead of whoever is in charge based on the systems already in place, right? And so when you're thinking about a Venus and Jupiter conjunction meeting limitation, it's not the same type of abundance. It's going to be a little more tempered. And in fact, it actually can create a little more sense of overwhelm and duress because it's like we're clamping down on hope and love rather than the idea of, you know, maybe thinking about that overt expansion and belonging and nurturing that I think Cancer, the highest vibration, really wants to be. This is playing on fear because Saturn is also so much about fear, which, you know, we see a lot of, especially when you think about ICE grounding out families, when you see how policy is getting implemented, it's all coming from a place of fear in the structures that, you know, currently here.
It's incredibly Cancerian as well. It's very, very much Cancer of the need to taking it to an extreme of the need to defend the homeland from the other, the need to insulate, the need to protect the immediate family and the immediate family only, or the nation, because we can see on a larger scale the symbolism of Cancer representing like the nation, the homeland, the motherland. Excuse me. And so there's everything that's going on with the way immigrants in particular are being scapegoated is very much connected to Cancer and how Cancer is positioned in the United States, the Sibley chart.
Absolutely. And the only reason why I even wanted to bring up the possibility of gay marriage getting overturned is because I saw a bunch of articles that legal experts say we shouldn't be worrying about this and it's very unlikely compared to what you think. And I'm kind of like, I don't know.
We've been saying that over and over again of like, no, this can't actually happen based on our legal system. And it's like, well, all of the systems are actually breaking down and there's particular people in power who are continuing to push the envelope on how far they can break the system. So again, correct. We are like, we have yet to leave unprecedented times.
No, we're not. We're very much in it. We're in the United States' Uranus return. And it is a very, like, when you, again, think about an empire collapsing on itself, dying, things like that. Like, we are still in it. I know Pluto, the Pluto return of the United States, technically already passed with Pluto and Capricorn, but.
But it kicked it off.
Realistically, a Pluto transit just doesn't like come and go overnight. No. Like, it takes some time to marinate, you know?
Yeah. And we got the things that like started stirring the pot, and now it's a whirlpool in the pot. It's still being stirred, and there's more and more kind of like hits to come. It's, you know, with astrology, like a lot of times when we're looking, you can look at astrology with zero context and come up with a lot of different potentials for what that astrology could be. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. we didn't just fall out of a coconut tree. We have context and we have to utilize that context to kind of understand what certain astrology is pointing towards. So while, yes, there was a beautiful, incredible transit of Venus and Jupiter, the two benefics coming together in Cancer, where they're both so happy, so loving, beautiful, wonderful. But the context of the entire world at this point is that there's horrible things happening. There's a genocide going on. This current, like, nation that you and I live in is slowly crumbling. This empire is falling actively. So, you know, we're not going to get the... On a global scale, on a grand scale, we're not going to get the best possible outcome of that transit. We're going to get the outcome that fits in with the context of the world we're living in. On an individual level, individuals might have beautiful, incredible, wonderful expressions of a transit. But the difference between the individual and the collective is vast.
Yeah, I what I would also say is, you know, part of the reason why I think I was super motivated to change the format a little bit, not to say I'm moving away from deep dives like forever, but just the idea of switching things up, right? And yeah, mixing things up, was because I had like posted this thing online about birth control and how Trump, the administration, is like burning about like $10 million worth of birth control in Belgium, which again is very Handmaid's Tale coded and where we are in fertility and, you know, abortion rights in America. And an astrologer, and buzz her, I mean, I she wasn't a troll by any means, you know, she wasn't saying like any hateful speech or anything. She just literally dropped a comment saying, okay, so the way I view this interpretation, Venus and Jupiter in Cancer is expanded fertility and Saturn is sterilization. And so this is actually helping the desterilization of women, healthy women, to bring in beautiful babies into the world. And part of me was like, okay, like, this is why the context is important. But at the same time, you have the context and that's the interpretation you're still arriving at. So my thing is, I used to be very uncertain about how I wanted to communicate like astrology and politics. And not that there ever should be a difference. But, you know, in astrology, right, like it if you are on the more spiritual side of things, you're kind of operating off this like, we hold this to the highest degree. No belief is right or wrong because, you know, we honor all different human experiences. We're all supposed to experience different things. But then, you know, a fine, when push comes to shove and there is like active genocides and famine and people literally trying to infringe on rights. Like, my thing is always, if you are trying to overstep and overreach your power, that is a problem. And that is what I will not stand for. And that is what I will vocalize. And I would like to be the astrologer for people who share that worldview. And I also would like to be the astrologer for people who might want to have a deeper conversation about why their worldview could be, you know, skewed or misconstrued. So I never am going to be the person that says, don't like F you guys, or like, you know, if you're this, I will never talk to you again. But I did struggle with that as an astrologer. I guess that's the Chiron Saturn thing as well. Like, how much grace do you give, but you still have to be a bridge at the end of the day. So it's a very interesting role being an, you know, when you think about involving yourself in more mundane astrology, but as an astrologer, like, it is more, we're in a time where you can't just be a passive observer. It just feels a little too, I don't know, it just feels a little too inconsequential. It feels a little morally weird to sit on the bylines. I don't know. I can't sleep at night, so.
Yeah, I can't sleep at night regardless. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to do my darndest to try to give insight and some valuable information that can be used given the times, that can be used in these times. I'm someone who can be, you know, just from my perspective, I can be very idealistic. I've got Neptune really close to my midheaven. Like, it's one of it's top in my chart.
Oh, beautiful.
It's also really like in a very tight aspect to my moon. Like, I've got a lot of Neptune. I can be very, very idealistic. And in certain contexts, that is great. Like, I think a big superpower for me is being able to try to vision a better future. But you can't do that to such a degree where you're actually ignoring the reality of the current moment.
Yeah, I think that's also very Saturn and Neptune and Aries and, you know, opposing Mars and Libra, right? Like, we had that full moon in Aquarius on the 9th. And when you think about just kind of arriving at this acceptance of where we are and really seeing the carnage, it doesn't mean that the vision for what we want for the future or our goals isn't possible, but you have to read the room. You have to understand where you're at right now in order for you to actively take more aligned steps to get you closer to where you need to go.
Yes, 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 yes. The last thing I want to bring up, just something that I like randomly noted on when I was doing like the smallest amount of research to prepare for this episode this morning. Nothing like the research I did for our first interview, where please, please, if you're listening, go listen to our Halsey episode. Whether you like Halsey or not, hopefully you do like Halsey. I'm a huge Halsey fan. And oh my God, the research I did for that episode was like so much fun. And it's we got amazing. Super in depth.
It was amazing, honestly. I still maintain, like, this is like one of my favorite episodes that I have done. And I just because loved it really was
that conversation.
So thorough and like your mind, you know,
I listened
really
to like
conversation.
Every album. I was pulling out lyrics. I read the Wikipedia page for each album. I found all these relevant dates. I was pulling up charts left, right, and center. Oh my gosh, it was wild.
So good. So good.
As opposed to then the Taylor Swift episode, I didn't do a ton of research. I just came in with my knowledge as a Swiftie. And then this episode today, you know, was we scheduled this yesterday. We scheduled this interview yesterday. So it was like, let's just see where we go. But I did want to take a look at like your Agent of Pluto page, the Pop Astrologist page. I was looking a little bit at your birth chart. I re-listened to our episode that we did, episode 4 of this podcast. But what I noticed was that your website as a professional astrologer is coming up on its solar return.
Your
pinned post on your Agent of Pluto page, it talks about like, okay, like I just launched this website and that was posted on September 13th and it's today, August 18th. So what have you learned in that year? Was there a particular transit or astrological moment that you elected to launch that website? Happy little business birthday, but tell me more about that.
Oh my gosh. So you know what, I don't know how you felt about this and making your website, and maybe this is something every entrepreneur kind of navigates in this space, but it is so revealing. It is so personal. It is so like, what have I done? What have I accomplished? What do I offer? Like, it is so
you. Oh my
god,
I have a website. Yeah, it makes it really official, and you want it to be so perfect and like representative of you and your work.
Yes, exactly. And it therefore you can kind of get in your head about it, and you can take such a long time. So like, I only really launched that website about effectively like I really started being in business. Let's just say like at the start of 2023, like I had a few trial months after quitting my last gig. And, you know, then I was like, okay, I do. At the time, I didn't necessarily need the website because thankfully I had gotten opportunity from just Instagram. You know, Instagram was just such an amazing tool and people were already booking readings from that. But the website just made it feel more official. And I had gone back and forth with, do I even need a website? But when I really embraced the exercise, it was such a, especially when you write your about me section, you know, when you get to exactly like it kind of brings up a, oh my God, what am I saying? But honestly, when I wrote it and thinking about all the experience that I'd accumulated last year, I felt really proud. I felt, wow, you know, all these random things I did all connected and they made sense. And for me, the biggest thing was trying to harmonize both personalities on the page, whether it's Agent of Pluto, whether it's Pop Astrologist. And I think ultimately, like I was doing too much initially. Mm-hmm. And I would say the first year was me exploring and me really expanding. And I did a lot of writing for other people, actually. And that was what I heavily kind of featured on, you know, my Pop Astrologist page. Or everything I did was kind of still like, oh, this is what I'm doing for other people. And I remember even looking at those headshots that I got, which I'm very thankful. I have a neighbor who takes photographs. And so we have a beautiful working relationship. But
love friends who are photographers.
So undervalued, honestly, yeah. And so necessary. But I even think about the pictures then and what I have now. It's like I even see myself differently. It's like I have a different vibe. At the time, there was less, I guess, assuredness of how I wanted to present. And so I went with the Plutonic, more mysterious, more like you can't really tell what I'm about. And then when I looked at the pictures that I took recently, they just felt so much lighter. You know, it just felt so much like I maybe got through a lot of blocks from even this journey. And now it's coming out on the website. And so I'm actually relaunching, or at least I'm zhuzhing my website up. I'm actually going to like launch it on the new moon in Virgo again this week. Just to like, you know, new headshots. I'm formally offering like more
tutoring, more intense, like, or intentional mentoring. So, you know, people like want to almost like, it's not like I'm teaching you astrology. It's not like I'm teaching you the basics. It's not like I'm teaching you all the things. What you come to me for is like, you have an understanding of it. How do I even deepen the way I approach a chart? And, you know, if you're thinking about even starting your business, like, well, how to create a brainstorm offerings and ideas and things like that. So tutoring in the sense of like, not just like academic tutoring, but really just like a whole 360 kind of tutoring. And then I'm also going to be offering like, you know, 30, like I used to offer 30 minute readings and that was only for Mercury retrogrades. But then now I'm kind of putting that as like a solidified offering. I think the website actually is, you shouldn't view it as a chore. You should really view it as an extension of yourself, and you get to show people different versions of yourself. And so again, I'm a Pluto rising person. And so all these things always are naturally going to go through iterations to always like make better, improve, but it's always going to reflect how I've grown as a person as well. So I'm really excited for this next iteration, I guess.
Congratulations. I'm excited for you. Knowing those photos that you're referencing, it is very much like you kind of evolved from showing more your Scorpio rising, your Pluto and Scorpio rising, to your Jupiter in Leo midheaven. So how beautiful, how fun.
Awesome. Oh my gosh.
So what, everyone should go take a look at that website. It will be, this episode will be coming up after the Virgo new moon. So the website will be zhuzhed. It will be refreshed. Go take a look. And what is that website, Tasha?
It is agentofpluto.com. Yes, there is a separate tab at the Pop Astrologist, which is basically a very simple landing page. But I feel like my Pop Astrologist self takes up so much room on social media that the website is really where the Agent of Pluto gets to live and, you know, kind of be behind the scenes a little bit, but still up front.
Love that. So agentofpluto.com, the Pop Astrologist on socials and YouTube. Definitely go check out the YouTube channel. I'm going to link all these things in the show notes. Final notes, Tasha, as we wind down this conversation.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I feel like we are in just such a powerful inflection point right now. And maybe that's how this year has felt. But I think this year, that was how it was always going to go. And so now we get to the second half of the year. We have the new moon in Virgo, or I guess when this episode comes out, we had the new moon in Virgo. And we have another Virgo.
We're gonna have an eclipse. Yeah, we're gonna have a second new moon in Virgo. So if you're confused, looking things up, and you're like, the new moon in Virgo hasn't happened yet, it did. There's two this year. Kind of crazy. Yes. One of them's an eclipse.
It's interesting because it just makes me think about, oh my God, you know, Virgos, as much as they are a mutable sign, they are the least prone to change, you know, or they are the most, the idea of I don't want anything to change because it's outside of my control. And it's always this kind of like, okay, chicken and egg thing where you're equipped to handle and navigate the changes. So you should welcome them. But of course, I understand why it would be difficult when your plan was so perfect off the bat. So it's the idea that the first new moon feels like one you can work with more intentionally. We know when you're thinking about like the habits you're looking to plant and really provide for yourself so that you can actually do the things you need to do. It's the idea of what systems do I have in place, right? How can I get organized? How do I want to like clarify certain things? It's a lot about housekeeping. It's very back to school energy. But the second new moon, or the second Virgo lunation, does happen at the end of Virgo season. So we get a start off and we get an end. And it's the most Virgo thing. It's so efficient. But that, you know, when you think about an eclipse, there is not as much self involved with that. It's almost like the seeds planted or the work done or the intentions set leading into an eclipse season, which really is all of September, is going to be the directives that the universe is going to take. You're already coding in the instructions. So the universe is now going to take those instructions. It's now going to play out exactly how it's supposed to play out, whether it's, again, the outcomes that you want for yourself, or maybe, you know, it's the idea that some things do need to get shaken out and we wouldn't have necessarily gotten them shaken out to get us closer to what we've asked for. So whatever goes away is always going to be helpful in helping you get to closer to what you need to. And if you happen to get, you know, all these good things happening, you can kind of think about, okay, great, I'm moving along the right path. Or
yeah, good job just if you set yourself up.
Yes, exactly. But this is why we also say don't actively like plan stuff during eclipses, because you just never know how things are going to go. And I would much rather see things come out naturally, you know?
Just buckle up and enjoy the ride. Like, just you've already bought the ticket. You're on the ride. You can't get off of it during eclipse season. What's going to happen is going to happen. Like you said, yes. If things like a lot of times, like I joke with one of my other good friends that like we're jumping on a rocket every time it's eclipse season. So we're like, yeah. All right, like time to ride the rocket again. And you're either going to like exponentially grow. There's going to be fantastic, great beginnings. Or there's going to be some things that really shift and change in maybe a more jarring way, but it's things that need to happen to kind of like realign your goals, your guideposts, and the direction that you're moving in. So I love that first non-eclipse Virgo new moon for you, though, like happening so close to that
right
Venus
on my
Mars conjunction.
You know, to be fair, I have a progress Virgo sun right now at 0 or 1. And my progress moon just moved into Pisces like a few weeks ago. So it's a progress full moon. There's a lot happening. And on some level, like I feel like I know what's coming, but I also don't have line of sight, you know, but I'm just excited.
We don't get to see what's coming. I like the way you said that we don't have line of sight with those eclipses. It's like I talked about this. If this is resonating with you as you're listening, dear listener, and you haven't listened to the previous episode, the one I just put out with Jonah Coyote Ivy, the introduction to that episode, I talked about what I refer to as goo phase. What many people refer to as goo phase, or kind of like being in that like birth canal type, like you're about to evolve, you're about to grow, you're about to like be reborn, but you're not quite there yet. And I talked a lot about how like you don't get to see what's on the other side until you're there. And that is also very, very relevant to eclipse season as well. You don't get to know what's on the other side until you're in it or about 6 months into it.
Oh my God. I mean, it's so interesting. I remember thinking, I actively said this to someone 1 year, the eclipse this person out of my life.
Yep.
It was a whole thing. I mean, that person came back, but it's funny because that whole chapter of our lives was eclipsed out. We were done with that. And even though the relationship came back, it was a totally different orientation. So eclipses can kind of work in all these different ways, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to be creative, a little creative with how you want to work with them, how you choose to receive them.
Yeah, and letting go of control, which will be tough with this being Virgo season, but it's not Virgo. Yeah, it is Virgo season. Yes.
It's starting Thursday. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I know. My brain has not been vibing with like linear time lately. I've been very confused on like when it is, when is happening right now. So I'm like, wait, what?
There's a lot happening in the sky.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, Tasha, this has been such a fun conversation. Anywhere else you want people to find you? We've listed The Pop Astrologist on Instagram, Agent of Pluto on Instagram, agentofpluto.com. The Pop Astrologist on YouTube.
No, that's it, honestly. I mean, if people come to New York, you know, and you ever want to meet up for coffee, LOL, like you can probably find me at the McCarran Parkhouse reading people randomly.
Little coffee astrology.
Yeah. I mean, it's my favorite thing. This is why I love New York. I just set up shop wherever, put my sign up, people walk through. It's amazing.
Speaking of people walking through, maybe walk-in readings, I'm going to plug myself really quick because on Friday, September 19th, right smack dab in the middle of eclipse season, I'm going to be doing my first walk-in readings in a heck of a long time. I think it's the first walk-ins I've done this calendar year. I can't remember the last time I did walk-ins. I think it was maybe Halloween last year. So if you're in Tucson, Arizona, I'm going to be at Aquamarine Daydream on 4th Avenue from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on September 19th. If you want to talk about how the eclipses are impacting you and your chart, get your butt down there. We're going to have a fantastic time, and I'm going to have more information about where you can do more walk-in or more in-person readings with me coming very, very soon. And of course, you can always book a tarot or astrology reading with me online on my website, persephonictarot.com. Tasha, what kind of readings are you offering right now?
So my usual is my soul session, which I kind of really is my like my main offering. I can literally look at your natal chart. I can talk to you about like career stuff. Like it really is what you want to make it to be. But it is based on your natal chart. And so that's about like 60 to 75 minutes. As I said, I do like now the mini session. So it's kind of more intended for check-ins for people. I also do mini readings, i.e. in the wild, but not so much like online, but you know, I have had situations where people and I talk in the DMs a whole lot and, you know, they like pay me for reading that way via whatever I'm communicating the DM. So that's also lovely, too. But my official readings really are soul sessions, which I think kind of encompass everything. I've been toying with the idea of a more intentional synastry reading where it is, you know, that would involve someone else's like information. So like, you know, if you have like, oh, this person that I'm in a relationship with for like whatever, right? And I want to understand our dynamic. It's like, okay, it's almost like a 2-hour like breakdown of you, that person, your charts together, the synastry. So it is a more involved thing. So that will be launching with the website as well when I read
awesome.
It too.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And I do not do synastry reading. So if you want a synastry reading, please, please, please go to Tasha. She's your girl for that.
I have a Mars and Venus.
Hey, Mars Venus conjunction. Perfect. Oh my gosh. Well, Tasha, thank you so much for talking with me today. I have so loved getting to chat with you so much this week. It's been really wonderful. I love my astro friends and super, super excited to actually see you in person next year. Hopefully, maybe. Yeah, I was saying maybe, hopefully that happens sooner than next fall. But, you know, stay tuned for what we're going to be stirring up next September, because it's bound to be really cool. Definitely planting the seeds for next Virgo and Libra season, this Virgo and Libra season.
Never too early. Thank you for having me back on. Always such a pleasure. And we obviously have to have you back. We got to keep ping-ponging back and forth.
Gotta keep it up. Incredible. We'll go check out my episodes on The Pop Astrologist Presents. And even though we didn't pull any cards today, because that's the format of these new special episodes, we're going to sign off as usual. I am wishing you all the best. And as always, happy shuffling.